It's time for the Fantasy Guru Podcast featuring Greg Cosell. It's player and team analysis taken directly from the film room. And now, here's your host, John Hansen.
And we're back with another edition of the Fantasy Guru Podcast here on our new home at Podcast One, Podcast One/Fantasy-Guru. I'm John Hansen, the publisher of FantasyGuru.com. Of course, it's August. I'd be remiss if I did not mention this is our big time, obviously, in FantasyGuru.com, entering our 22nd year. Came out number one last year, our projections did in the preseason on Fantasy Pros, and we are about to launch a brand new website, which is going to be outstanding. So we're fired up about that. We're always fired up to talk with our guy, Greg Cosell from NFL Films. Greg, we'll cut right to the chase. How are you doing here on a Thursday in August, kind of late August? We're getting closer, Greg, but still only one game in the books. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. You know, been through a whole bunch of tape, and, you know, preseason is always interesting in many ways. Conclusions tough to draw sometimes from a first preseason game, but I'm getting back in the groove and looking forward to the second week.
Let's start in the NFC, actually. And what we do, if you're new to the podcast, is we just go around the league division by division, and I just ask Greg basically a lot of the thoughts that we have here in the office in terms of covering the league for fantasy football. We get Greg's perspective. So we'll start in the NFC. Greg, you mentioned the preseason, and obviously it was a very good showing for Dak Prescott, a good kid. You and I both interviewed him. You know, here's my takeaway, and let me see what you think. I don't think there's any denying the fact that the kid is pretty physically talented. He's got a pretty good arm. But, Greg, as you know, this was a lot of one-read throws, which he can make, and he made them. Pristine pocket back there. I didn't see a lot of pressure on him. A good showing for sure, Greg, but how much of it should we just kind of throw out the window and chalk it up to, well, it's a great O-line, it's the first preseason game. Your thoughts on Prescott?
Well, I don't think you ever throw anything out the window. You just try to put it in perspective. You know, he was asked to execute certain things, not necessarily difficult, but you also wanted him to come away feeling good about his performance. And I think that's where the coaching staff comes in, and that's what they did. The thing that stood out, two things stood out to me. Number one, he played under center, and he looked good dropping back. He didn't look like he had any issues dropping back. He was comfortable doing that, which obviously he did not do in college.
Great point.
And the second thing that I thought was really impressive was I thought he threw the ball with excellent ball placement on a number of throws. And, you know, the touchdown is the one that obviously is the most visible because it was a touchdown to Terrence Williams. But for the most part, he threw the ball very, very comfortably and very accurately. And the third thing I should probably add is he played with poise and awareness. He read blitz a few times, and he read coverage. And, you know, that's what you were hoping. You were hoping that he would execute what he was asked to do. I'm not drawing any conclusions to say, oh, if he were to be playing week eight, well, this doesn't mean anything. We don't know any of that. But in this first game, given a chance to play basically a whole half and get into the flow of a game, he was very efficient and was very accurate.
If he did this every week of the preseason, the next 3 weeks, or at least the next two, would that adjust your opinion of Dak Prescott? Would you be like, wow, he's done it?
No, I mean, it would make me feel good about his ability to execute what he was asked, but he also would not be playing defenses that are game planning specifically for him in situational football, which is what the NFL is about. So you feel good about what he would have accomplished, but you can't automatically then say, oh, this kid is going to be a really good player. It's just not the same.
Let's go to Washington, and I know you've watched a lot of tape, and again, very small sample size, but any insight on their struggles running the football? Because I'm trying my best not to overreact to one game, but, you know, Matt Jones and Keith Marshall got stymied. Not a lot of opportunities here, Greg, but I mean, can you pinpoint, thinking back to last year, in terms of if we need to point the finger, is it the line, is it the backs, likely both? But your thoughts on their struggles dating back to last year running the ball?
Yeah, they did, with the exception of a few games, they did struggle to run the ball with consistency last year. And I think, as with most things, John, I think it's a combination. I mean, I think that the line was very erratic in the run game. Their pass game is different because it's a quick rhythm pass game, so that can camouflage any O-line weakness or flaws. Run game is a little bit different. And I think that, Matt Jones, I liked him coming out, as I know you did, but he was never really a true foundation back in college, so I think he has to potentially grow into that role, and there's a question as to whether he can fill that role. Just because he's big and has some running skill, there's normally a reason why a guy is not something, and he was never truly a feature back at Florida.
Yeah, no question, that's fair, and I think Kirk Cousins off to a good start with a series or two. I still feel pretty darn good about him. We move on here, Greg, to the Philadelphia Eagles, and let's break this down. I don't know if you know much about the player the Eagles traded for, but it's a tough call, I guess, because he's a new player who was just discarded after being a second-round pick for basically not knowing where to be and where to line up and how to play football.
Look, the bottom line is you're dealing with an Eagles team that is very weak at the wide receiver position. And then you're dealing with a player in Dorial Green-Beckham that physically is extremely gifted and obviously has other issues, but they're taking a chance on a player that has physical gifts in an area of extreme need. I mean, I got to tell you, I watch the Eagles offense, and I watch it very closely because, I do work, in the Philadelphia area and for the team.
Yeah.
And their receivers really struggle. I mean, the film tells you, this is not what I'm about to say. It's not an interpretation or an opinion, but Nelson Aguilar really has a difficult time separating. And, now he's in his second season, and you have to start to think what he is or what he isn't. And so they know this because they're with him every day. So they need bodies at receiver. So they traded for a 6'5", 237-pound kid who's talented, big, can be physical, moves well. The comparison was made when he came out to a Plaxico Burress type receiver. Now, I can't speak to his mental abilities or other things, but it's a move the Eagles, in some sense, had to make.
Are you a little surprised that Aguilar, look, no one thought that he was the next, Philip Dorsett or a true burner in that draft class, but I thought he was a kid who was explosive with the ball in his hands. Based on your tape study of Aguilar coming out of USC, are you a little surprised that he's having this struggle with the separation? Because I almost wonder if it's kind of in his head, Greg, if he's just kind of lost up top.
And, and that's possible, but I would say this. You made the point about being explosive with the ball in his hands. I think he's more explosive that way than he is as a route runner, and that's the issue. The issue is he does not really have separation quickness, and that shows up. I was out of training camp. I watched the tape, and that's something that consistently shows up, that the separation quickness is just not quite what it needs to be for a receiver who's about 196, 198 pounds and does not have the body to become 212 or 215.
What were your impressions of Carson Wentz? I think the biggest thing, I guess, for me is that those passes sailing on him, but otherwise it was a little up and down, but I definitely saw flashes, some pocket movement. I think the ball comes out of his hand nicely, that first completion to Zach Ertz. I thought it was a little bit of a laser. Give us your Cliff Notes version of Carson Wentz.
I thought he was sharp mentally. He read coverage. He was aware of blitz, knew where to go with the ball. I thought he looked poised and composed. The criticism would be that he was not as precisely accurate on throws that he will need to be when he returns.
Real quick on Kenyon Barner, because not only, Greg, does it look like he'll make the roster, he kind of looks like the backup right now for Ryan Matthews. Is Kenyon Barner, is he good enough to be the guy for 6, 7, 8 weeks, or do you view him more as a backup who you could use for maybe 1 to 2 weeks, but longer than that, you're in trouble?
Well, I think he's this team's version of what the Chiefs had with, a Spencer Ware or a West, those kinds of backs. Ultimately, you don't want them to be the guy for 6, 7, 8 weeks, but I think that they can do that for a couple of weeks and then be a backup. And if they have to carry 8, 9, 10 times in a game, I think he can fill that role very effectively.
And I know Wendell Smallwood drew a very interesting comparison, 5'11", 201. I think you know where I'm going with this. You have a name when you look at Wendell Smallwood, Greg, and it's pretty good name. Yeah.
Well, yes. I mean, he's not that – yes, we talked about this. He's not that player, but I think theoretically within the Eagles' offense with Doug Peterson that they see him as a Jamaal Charles type. Now, not in terms of ability,
gotcha,
but in terms of utilization. And because he can line up, detach from the formation as a receiver, he gives you that element. And within the context of that offense, I think they see him down the road as someone who could carry 220 times, you know, not a true foundation back in the sense we think of, you know, DeMarco Murray in 2014 or the Adrian Petersons or, you know, those kinds of guys, but I think they see him as a found, you know, as a feature back within the context of their offense.
And finally for this division, the Giants, Greg, it is not looking good for Victor Cruz. So I really think we need to turn our attention to Sterling Shepard, who I liked in the preseason opener. I like that pass, that dead duck that Ryan Nassib threw to him for the 24-yard. He made a tough catch on the sideline there. Your thoughts, and I know you felt that Shepard could come in there and play the slot, yesterday, but
yep,
if Cruz is not in the mix, you know, they do have other guys like Dwayne Harris, but clearly they're going to have to put this kid on the fast track and play him as a starter opposite Beckham Jr. Your thoughts on Shepard in that regard?
Well, the big question with Shepard, who I like very, very much, is whether he can play consistently on the outside. So, in other words, when the Giants line up in base personnel, can he be the receiver opposite Beckham? And I think, as much as I like Shepard, I think that's a question at this point.
Fair.
So, I wouldn't be willing right now to say, oh, yeah, no problem. If he was definitely the slot guy and that was where he was going to play, I think that he could be outstanding from day one. So, it remains to be seen. And you know what? We may, in 2 weeks when we do this again, we'll do it next week, but let's say 2 weeks down the road, we may have a better answer for that based on what he is asked to do in the preseason.
NFC North, did you watch the tape of the Packer offense?
You know what? I did not because, without, the main guy, Rodgers, I did not watch it.
Well, I watched it because I watched the starting quarterback, Greg, grow up in South Jersey, as you know, and a little surreal to me, my son's Pop Warner quarterback started for the Packers. My son used to play running back, taking handoffs from Joe Callahan, and there's Joe Callahan handing the ball off to Eddie Lacy. So you're kind of crazy.
Wow. Well, there you go. Yeah. I feel badly now that I did not watch Joe Callahan, but, what can I tell you?
Yeah, well, it's the first preseason. And look, I was able to text Rich Gannon, who did the game. And as you know, Rich Gannon's a Philly guy.
Right,
so,
sure.
So maybe he's a little South Jersey, Philly-centric, but I'm trying to call up my text from him. And you know Rich. He's a pretty harsh critic of quarterbacks, right?
Yes.
Here's the response from Rich Gannon. Did a terrific job, really impressive, !! So we'll see. We'll see if he makes the
game. Wow. So I guess Aaron Rodgers is on the trading block. Huh?
Oh, watch out, Aaron. Watch out. He may even steal Olivia from Aaron as well.
That's right. That's right.
But I don't know if you saw the highlights. I thought Eddie Lacy ran hard. He looked like he was kind of shot out of a cannon, breaking some tackles. But we'll move on, Greg. And by the way, we may not see Aaron Rodgers in the preseason, which
no,
it's a little scary.
Well, we'll find out.
With Jeff Janis a little iffy here on the roster as well. Let's move on to Detroit. And, boy, it just seems like with this Lion team, I don't know if you saw much of it, but this offensive line.
Saw a little bit, yeah.
This offensive line, Greg, they just, I don't know what it is. They've got talent, but they just have not yet come together. It's early, but
well, they started Taylor Decker at left tackle, and that's going to be a work in progress. I mean, that's where they want him to play, so we'll see how that works. I tell you what, Anquan Boldin. Did you see any of this?
Yeah, he can still play.
I mean, he made a move. Granted, it was against a rookie safety for the Steelers, their second round pick, Sean Davis. But I mean, he made a move on him. He just schooled Sean Davis on a 30-yard completion. I think on the first or second series. I think it was the first series. And Anquan Boldin can still do that from the slot.
And they want to spread the ball around, Greg. So it's not a bad receiving core here. When you got Bolden, Tate,
no.
Jones, that's not bad with Ebron. But that
no.
that O-line, though, Greg, is a little scary. But let's move on to Minnesota.
Well, I think we have to wait a little bit on that, John, because they're working in younger players.
Yeah, okay.
So, again, I would say that let's see what happens, you know, after they play two more preseason games.
Very fair. Let's move on to Minnesota. Did you see any of Theodore
Bridgewater? Yeah, I did. I watched their offense. And I got to tell you, he made a throw that was very encouraging to me, and it wasn't a touchdown. Did you see it, by the way? Did you watch?
I didn't see every play of that game, but which
he made a 22-yard completion to Thielen on third and seven.
Yeah.
Which was it was a staple North Turner route concept, you know, because I've been through all of Bridgewater 2-3 weeks ago from last year. So it was classic North Turner route concept. But what I really liked about it was a timing and anticipation throw with precise ball placement. But even more importantly, it was a turn it loose throw. And to me, that's a real positive for Bridgewater. So, you know, hopefully we'll see more of that because he wasn't that guy last year.
Did you see any signs of, and again, all disclaimers for this month of August of preseason should be assumed, but did you see any signs of, okay, look at this line, look at this protection, he's got time here to stand?
Protection was not very good. The line was, you know, despite some good names, you know, Matt Khalil did not look very good. Andre Smith got beat. I actually thought the center, Sullivan, looked very good. But, you know, the line was not real good overall.
Right. I was going to go right there with it because I don't do this often, but I studied Matt Khalil for, I believe, the two series, or at least the first two.
He wasn't very good.
It's like he gets beat on every play, Greg.
I know. And you know what's really, I mean, disturbing, I guess, could be the right word,
yeah,
is his technique is so bad for a guy that's been in the league. You would expect at least the technique to be solid. But the second play of the game, which ended up being, I believe, a sack, I mean, he just got schooled by Michael Johnson, and he looked very bad. But overall, the O-line did not play well. I know Sullivan did look good on a number of plays, but the two tackles, Smith and Khalil, were not very good.
Yeah, and if Smith doesn't do it, you do have T.J. Clemmings, who could potentially help them out. And also, how about Charles Johnson all of a sudden coming on here? So all of a sudden, Minnesota, they do have some weapons there for Teddy Bridgewater. Of course, probably a moot point if Teddy is not upright and in a fairly clean pocket. Did you see Chicago? I'm curious to see what you thought of Jeremy Langford. He's bulked up a little bit.
Yeah, and I did not, okay. And I just haven't gotten to it yet. I'm going to, but I just did not get to that yet. And because I had to finish up my greatest games on Monday, and I lost about 4 or 5 hours of film study, you know, leading up to our conversation. So I did not get a chance, but I'm anxious to see Langford because, you know, I'm curious to see how they ultimately want to use him for this season, whether they truly see him as the guy or whether they see him more as kind of a mix and match guy, a compliment, or, you know, part of a committee.
Well, here's the thing, Greg, because I talked with a guy in Chicago this week, and Jordan Howard, the rookie, is slow off the mark, and this is John Fox. So if he doesn't,
right,
you know, improve, you know, dramatically in the next couple of weeks, I don't think he's going to be much of a factor. They still have Jacquizz Rodgers, Greg, and he's going to make the team, and Kadeem Carey. In your mind,
who they actually really, really like. It's just that his running style is that of a 225-pound back, and he's not 225 pounds.
Yeah. Give us a quick refresher on Kevin White, because he's starting to come on a little bit here. Do you compare him to anyone in the league right now? And how good of a player can this guy be in a year or two at his best?
Well, you know, when you look at the size and the speed, and again, that's not all it takes to be a good receiver, obviously, or a great receiver. You know, I think that a lot of people probably thought that if he could reach his ultimate level of play, that the size and speed were similar to a guy like Julio Jones. And I know that's high praise, and I'm not saying he's going to be Julio Jones, but he has that kind of size, that kind of speed, that kind of body type. You know, he's kind of thick for someone who's really fast, but I thought he had a lot to learn about playing wide receiver, but he did have a year to at least learn it in the classroom. Now we'll see how if he can translate that to the field.
Atlanta Falcons. Any thoughts on, I don't know if you saw that, Mohamed Sanu? Boy, they are so thin at receiving. I guess it's the same question, Greg. If they need Sanu on the outside, that is a question because he's ideally in the slot.
Yes. And, you know, I think ultimately they're going to have to be a run-first team and have Matt Ryan work off that. I mean, as much as I like Matt Ryan, I think when all's said and done, he's a little bit more of a compliment, and I think they're going to need to run the ball.
That's a great point. And Tevin Coleman, I guess a little refresher on Tevin Coleman. Drafted by this regime, good fit for the scheme, and unlike Devontae Freeman, he is a home run hitter. I think that Devontae Freeman's still the guy, but Tevin Coleman...
Well, that's an interesting thing, John. I mean, you know, again, as you do your work, I mean, I think we have to see how that plays out because at the time they drafted Tevin Coleman, Devonta Freeman was not necessarily seen as a quote-unquote feature back. And obviously he came on really well last year and fit that outside zone scheme of Kyle Shanahan beautifully. But I think they ultimately drafted Tevin Coleman to be the guy. And Coleman is about 215, 220, bigger than Freeman. And he does have that one-cut downhill explosiveness to him. So I'm anxious to see how that plays out.
Well, I know you don't play fantasy, but I'm sure if you did, and you let's say you took a Freeman in the second round, and you're in the eighth round, and you know all the high-end players are off the board, you would probably be inclined, you know what, I'm going to get Tevin Coleman, because if Freeman goes down, I think Tevin Coleman, Greg, he could lock it in. He's getting 17, 18 touches a game at least, and again, home run.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you.
Let's talk Devin Funchess, Greg, because he's coming on like gangbusters here in Carolina. We noticed it last year with your tape study. You said, look, he's seemingly moving faster later in the season, which tells us, you know, he's more comfortable and understands his assignments and the like. How do you see him? I mean, is the upside capped here? Could he potentially even exceed Kelvin Benjamin in a year or two as the go-to?
Well, I don't know, because I think, you know, look, I did run through their tape this week, and Benjamin's still the X receiver, or he was in the preseason. I think that's what he is, which is normally the number one kind of guy. I think Funchess can be moved around the formation. He can even line up tighter to the formation if they so choose. But, you know, this is a team that went from a couple years ago, everybody said, oh, they've got nothing at wideout, and now with Benjamin back, all of a sudden they've got a lot of different dimensions at wide receiver, John. Don't you agree? I mean,
Absolutely. They've
got the two big guys in Benjamin and Funchess. They have the speed with Brown and Ginn. And Ginn, they started the game with a reverse to Ginn, and he can still run. They have Olsen. I mean, this is a team that has a lot of offensive dimensions now.
Well, they've put it together brilliantly, Greg, because as you noted to us years ago, Cam Newton, an arm thrower, therefore mechanically he's not sound. So you need a big-bodied receiver, and you get Kelvin Benjamin. Wide catching radius. Now you get Funchess, but it's also, as you know, Greg, a shot play offense, so you need some speed.
Correct.
And you got Ginn, so it's the best receiving
corps
ever.
And Ginn and Brown. Yeah, Ginn and Brown are shot play receivers because on first down, when you're in your base formation, and almost every team will play with a single high safety, you get Ginn and Brown on the perimeter, and they can run by some people in what is essentially one-on-one coverage. You know, so they really have everything you would like.
It's the best receiving corps Cam's ever had, Greg.
I agree.
That's pretty evident. Tampa Bay, I don't see too much going on. I believe we talked about Cameron Brait last year. Did you pop in tape on the New Orleans Saints?
Oh, yeah. The Saints, I did not.
Oh, okay.
That's one team I did not get to.
Do you have anything else on Brait?
No, but I really like him. I was watching him pretty closely, but I was at the game, and then I watched the tape, and I just like the way that kid moves. He's, you know, because he's not a big-name guy, came out of Harvard, and obviously not a draft choice and all that, but he really moves well.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if he keeps his top job over Austin Seferian Jenkins, because, Greg, they need another target for Winston. You know, Mike Evans, fine, coming off a down year. We know Vincent Jackson, the veteran. We hope he can stay on the field. They'll move him around a little bit, get him in the slot, a la Larry Fitzgerald a little bit, Greg. But Jameis needs another passing target, and right now it looks like it's Brait.
Yeah, I would agree.
Let's move on to New Orleans. Michael Thomas,
I did see some of that because he made a couple of great catches. And what I was really surprised by, and I thought it was very intriguing, was that he lined up as an outside receiver.
Exactly.
And again, I don't know if that's where they see him ultimately, but he certainly did in the first preseason game. And I got to tell you, he looked quicker than he did when I watched his film at Ohio State. So I was, yes, now that you said that, it was one of the first things I popped in, because they played last Thursday night, I believe, so I think I actually looked at that on Friday morning,
yeah.
So that's why I forgot. So I did see it, because I remember immediately noticing that, wow, they lined him up on the outside, and he looked pretty quick.
I can't recall if anyone was in the slot while that was taking place with him on the outside. I guess
I don't remember the specific formation. I just was immediately surprised by that and then impressed.
Hell of a throw by Breeze to Cooks in that first quarter. I mean, he really put that ball where no one else but Cooks could get it down the field a little bit.
Yeah. And well, Breeze has done that once or twice in his career.
Yeah, a couple times. NFC West, Arizona. Greg, how about all of a sudden, don't look now, but Troy Nicholas is coming on, and he's running with the starters, and we all know that Bruce Arians is not usually one to feature the tight end, but Greg, as you told us 2-3 years ago, and I saw him at the combine.
I liked him.
I mean, it looks like his last name's Gronkowski, Greg, and think about this. Not that he's going to be a huge factor for fantasy, but as it relates to the rest of the offense and Carson Palmer with those three receivers, and now if you've got an athletic, huge guy in Nicholas, Greg, that could be a little scary for Bruce Arians.
And keep one thing in mind, and this is a very important point. Carson Palmer is a read-it-out quarterback, and by that I mean he doesn't focus on one guy. It's not a case where, you know, some teams, hey, we're going to get the ball to, you know, Dez Bryant. Carson reads it out.
Yeah.
So if the coverage takes him to Troy Nicholas, Troy Nicholas is going to catch balls. You know, so it's not, you know, he's not going to just pump it to Larry Fitzgerald or Michael Floyd or John Brown. He's going to read it out and throw it to where the coverage takes him.
So even if Nicholas on a play is the fourth read, Palmer, a professional quarterback, can get there and potentially get him the ball. So I'm giving Carson a little bump, just a little bit of a boost. I don't know if you saw that game, but you know Nicholas had a really nice catch and run. But David Johnson looked great. He had a 21-yard run that he made look easy. But Chris was in there early, and so was Ellington. I just have this feeling. I love David Johnson like everybody else. I've got him high like everybody else. I'm not backing off of that. Everyone's in it. But I do feel like Arians is going to be a little bit of a mad scientist with David Johnson, still Chris Johnson, and also Andre Ellington. I think he's going to use all three guys.
Well, I'll admit that I was a little bit wrong on David Johnson coming out of Northern Iowa. I thought he'd be a really good receiver, which he is, and I know Steve Keim, who I respect greatly, said he's the best receiving back he's ever seen, and Steve's been doing this for a very long time. So I'll go with him on that, and that's fair. I did not think when I watched him in Northern Iowa that he would necessarily turn into a feature foundation-type back, and it looks like he can be that guy. Now, obviously, he's only going into a second year, but it looks like the skill set is there to do that, and I think he's going to end up playing the bulk of the snaps.
But I also think that they're going to be real smart about how they use him and not line it up and say, David Johnson, you're carrying the ball.
Oh, I agree.
22 times.
They're not they're not one of those teams, John. They're not. It's not like Adrian Peterson in Minnesota.
Exactly.
You know, even if Johnson played 80% of the snaps, and I'm just throwing that out, he's not going to carry 290 times.
In San Francisco, we all know it's going to be Blaine Gabbert. And I thought Carlos Hyde struggled a little bit catching the football. When you think back to his tape, I mean, is that a deficiency that fantasy owners should be worried about, that maybe he's not a true three-down back?
I would say probably isn't, and I don't know if he'll be used that way. You know, their offense, obviously Blaine Gabbert did not look very good, and I think he's clearly going to be the starter because Kaepernick's not even practicing. But Gabbert did not have a good first performance, and again, you can take that for however you want to take it. He was really not precise at all with his ball placement, and that was a bit concerning.
Vance McDonald's play, I guess, was just a bad play by the defender, but at the very least.
Yeah, McKinney fell down.
Yeah, exactly. At the very least, he showed he can run. Chip
Kelly, well, I did watch some of that game on TV, and I did hear Tim Ryan, who's out at practice every day. You know, he did the game for he does the 49ers preseason.
I know, Tim.
And he said that McDonald has looked very good, and the athleticism is finally starting to show, because we all thought when he came out of college, granted, a little smaller school at Rice, but he was always very athletic. There's been times he struggled to catch the ball, but I think that if he can do that, he does have good athletic. I mean, I would argue he's more athletic than Zach Ertz, and I think, you know, we saw that in Chip Kelly's offense, Zach Ertz can catch some balls, so theoretically McDonald should catch a good number of balls.
I mean, Chip's not going to hand down an edict that we've got to get the ball to Vance McDonald, but I think Blaine Gabbert maybe is a guy who may lean on his tight ends a little bit. At least you got the size, and these guys can run a little bit. Okay, so you like Vance McDonald. Greg, we can move on here. The Fantasy Guru podcast rolling along, going through the league as we always do. Your thoughts? Well, I guess it's an incomplete grade on Jared Goff because he got injured early in the game.
Yeah, but I thought there was a lot to like, okay? I thought, number one, he clearly has the instincts of a pocket quarterback. He's got patience in the pocket to make those late in the down throws, which are so critical. I thought he looked very comfortable dropping back from under center. Again, a guy who's never really done that. I thought he showed quick, light feet with a good set, good balance. Made some very easy throws, you know, looked comfortable doing it. Made a throw down the middle that Farrell Cooper dropped. It was a hitch late because he took him across the field to the far hash when he should have thrown it a beat earlier. But the fact that he made that throw, which was a downfield throw late in the down, I thought was very, very impressive.
Seattle, it's probably a moot point, but do you have any impressions of their number two quarterback right now at a TCU, Boykin?
Yeah, I thought he was just okay. I mean, I know people are getting excited. You know, I think he didn't, on the film didn't show me, and I did watch him, believe it or not, the film didn't show me an awful lot. You know, he didn't jump out to me.
You know, I'm borderline obsessed with their O-line right now. I thought, from what I saw, I mean, I don't watch every play like glued to the TV, but I watch as much as I can while I'm working as the games go on and all that, and I'll rewind if I see something. But I actually thought their O-line did a decent job. Any thoughts on them?
Or? He did.
Okay.
Yeah, they're playing Justin Britt at center, and I thought he really battled Poe, and I thought that he competed hard versus Poe. Glowinski is a second-year player playing left guard. I thought he looked pretty solid. You know, some mistakes, some things to work on. You know, the thing that's interesting to me, and I'd be curious how you see it developing, is Christian Michael, because I think he's the best back in terms of running ability on the team. Now, we know that he's had other issues for whatever they've been, but, you know, Thomas Rawls just came back. I'm going to be anxious to see how that plays out, and I know that Pete Carroll, he preys on Michael after the game, but he's always been a very talented runner.
I've actually asked Pete Carroll about Christian Michael myself a couple of years ago, and he did seem very high on the kid, and of course he did let him go, but now they brought him back. But here's the other thing, Greg. CJ Procise has been on the shelf all summer thus far.
Yeah.
One guy's out there in Seattle speculating he may not even make the team, which I would be floored by. He's a third round pick, but if he doesn't, Greg, I got to think Christian Michael's your third down back, because Thomas Rawls has got like 20 catches in his last 30 games in college in the
playoffs. Yeah. You know, and I thought Alex Collins actually looked pretty good too. So, I mean, they've got a bunch of backs, but Michael has always intrigued me. We know he hasn't done it ever on a consistent basis, but boy, there are times he just looks really, really good.
Yeah, no question about it. And we have been kind of down on Rawls all along, and it's not against Rawls because the kid was amazing, but a very small body of work. The injury, you know, we don't know if he can, you know, stay on the field. Obviously, it was a long recovery, but more importantly than anything, it's this competition. Pete Carroll is not married to him at all, so you know,
no.
It's. I mean, Michael's coming on, and in fact, Pete Carroll even said, you know, we got a nice 1-2 punch. Now, does that mean that they're going to be in a split backfield? I wouldn't rule it out, I'll tell you that, based on the talent, Greg. That's the NFC here, midway through the Fantasy Guru podcast, wrapping up the first week of the preseason with our man Greg Cosell from NFL Films. I'm John Hanson, and we want to talk about football. It is your passion. You know all the players and the teams, their strengths, their weaknesses. Now put that knowledge to the test and play for your shot at $1 million at DraftKings.com. It's just part of the $5 million in total prizes they're doling out in this week one contest. DraftKings.com, the destination for 1 week fantasy football. 1 week fantasy means no season long commitments. Play whenever you want with the players you want. Just pick your contest, draft your players, follow your team live, renew old rivalries by challenging friends and family in a private league to prove you're the superior GM, or join an existing league and go head-to-head with friends, coworkers, fantasy players from across the country. Head to DraftKings.com now to choose your players you could seriously cash in week one. Use the code GURU, G-U-R-U, play for free with your first deposit. That's code GURU to play for free for your share of the $5 million in total prizes in this week one contest, only at DraftKings.com, DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See website for details. Greg, let's get into it in the AFC. What did you think of one James Garoppolo? A little bit of an uneven performance, but overall I thought it was encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I would say. I would say that one theme that stood out to me was his tendency to predetermine some throws and then take too long to eliminate throws that were not there. And I just made a note to myself that this is something I need to look at as we go forward. And I'm sure there'll be a pretty good preseason sample because they've got to get him ready to play week one. So it's not as if he's going to play, you know, 10 snaps this week. So I would say overall he did not consistently distribute the ball with timing and efficiency. There were times I thought he didn't process what he saw, trust what he saw. And so there's some, you know, but he also made a couple of terrific throws. He made an unbelievably great throw to Mitchell, Malcolm Mitchell, who, by the way, looked very, very good, off a sluggo seam concept where he literally came all the way back to the other side of the field to hit Mitchell in a void in cover two. I mean, that was a big-time NFL throw where he showed great coverage recognition and pocket patience. So you hit it right on the head, John. There were some positives and there were some negatives. And, you know, I bet Bill Belichick is not bothered by that because, you know what, now they can coach him.
Yeah, but only one game. Should we be disappointed?
No.
I mean...
No.
Okay.
You should. These are just observations based on tape study. They're not judgments. They're observations.
Gotcha. Let's see. Anything else with New England? Did anything else jump out at you? Sounded like you saw the tape. I think James White, he's got to make this team, Greg. I don't know about him running inside, but, you know, the screen was a nice play. I mean, I like James White. I think he deserves to be on a roster at the very least, don't you think?
Well, I guess we're going to find out, you know, depending on Deion Lewis, because I think Deion Lewis and James White would probably essentially take the same role on the team.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course, I never like to make those kinds of statements when it comes to Bill Belichick because he sees things differently and better than I do. But my sense is that they would fill similar roles, so I think it would depend on their view of Deion Lewis.
Did you see Tyler Gaffney at all?
I did not.
Okay, he finally played after a couple of years on the shelf. We'll move on. I don't have anything on Buffalo.
Didn't see them.
Yeah, not much on the Jets, although Jason Morrow was apparently coming on, but didn't do much in the game. Quincy Enunwa? Is he a player we should play?
Well, that was the, you know what, those were back-to-back plays in which the Jaguars busted their foundational cover three. So I wouldn't necessarily look at those two plays and say, well, Enunwa was now going to be the guy or one of the guys, because those were two coverage busts that should never happen with the Jaguars, given that they're a cover three defense and that's what they practice. You know, I did take a look at Bryce Petty because here's my feeling, and I could be dead wrong. I think that because this present group, the organization, drafted both Bryce Petty and Christian Hackenberg, It would not surprise me if Geno Smith is not on this roster come the last cuts, because they're not going to keep four quarterbacks. So I made it a point to look at Petty, and he played, threw what I think 16, 17 balls, and I thought it was more positive than negative.
Oh, okay. Well, Geno's had a terrible summer, Greg, as you probably have heard. So.
Right. So this group didn't draft him. Obviously, Fitzpatrick's a 1-year deal player, and unless they get to AFC Championship game or Super Bowl, I can't imagine Fitzpatrick's the Jets quarterback next year. So I think they're going to really look hard at Petty and Hackenberg.
Shaky vibes overall in Miami, and we'll see if Arian Foster can play. I mean, Ryan Tannehill only attempted 4 passes. So
I watched that game hoping to see something, and I came away, and I'm just being honest with you, I feel like I have nothing to say after 8 plays or whatever it was.
You know, I think it's interesting, though, that Adam Gase is talking short passing attack and dink and dunk. It feels like he is doing that because Ryan Tannehill is his quarterback. I feel like Adam Gase would like to attack down the field a little bit more. I'm just not sure that Tannehill can do it.
Well, here's what I would say to that, and then we can move on. I don't think we've talked about the fact that he's not a great deep ball thrower, but I think it's more a function of the fact that Tannehill is not very good with people around him in the pocket. So I think that they want to get into a rhythm pass offense where the ball comes out. I think that's the reason he wants to do this.
And it's just good coaching, Greg, because that's what Tannehill's more comfortable with, throwing it to
I would agree.
Jarvis Landry. Andre Williams, Greg, he's not going away. Actually, you know what? I got off track there. Sorry, I'm looking at the box score. I forgot to ask you about Andre Williams, actually. Let me just do it because we just talked about Miami, and that's what they played. You know, he's dropped some weight. A skinnier, svelter Andre Williams, is that an element that can kind of bring him back and make him a little...
Possibly. Yeah. Because I actually thought when he came out of BC that he had a chance. And again, when I say a chance, John, I don't want people to think I'm suggesting he was going to be, a big-time feature back. But I thought he had a specific skill set, a downhill, urgent power runner. That's essentially what he was. So I thought he could do that in the NFL. Now, whatever that means given the team you're on, hey, even if he carries it 120 times, I thought he could be effective in that role. So maybe now he can be effective in that role.
See, that just goes to show, because we just went off script there. There are no scripts. It's not like Greg is sending me questions, or I'm sending Greg. I mean, we do like a 75-minute podcast in which I ask Greg, I don't know, 150 questions. He has no idea what any of them are going to be, and he sounds like a professor in the classroom. So that is why we love Greg Cosell.
Appreciate that, John. I appreciate that.
Well, no, I was actually thinking about that, listening back to a podcast. I'm like, Greg has no idea what I'm going to ask him, and it sounds like he's just very prepared. It's quite impressive. AFC North.
Greg. Yeah, I try to be honest. If I don't see something, I'm not going to make it up.
Yeah. Sammy Coates had a kind of a rough showing. I don't know if you can harken back to your tape study of him in college, but it looked like he was trying hard, too hard, a little sloppy, some ball security issues. I mean, was that in line with your concerns on the negative?
To me, Sammy Coates was a guy who looks like Tarzan, runs really fast in a straight line, but was not necessarily a skilled wide out in terms of the nuances of the position, and that has to be learned. And, it's always hard to put a timetable on that, and we're not there every day, so we don't know. But, I think that it will be a process with Sammy Coates.
Boy, Martavis Bryant, the kid made it look easy, basically. don't you think? I mean, he's
not quite as easy as Usain Bolt, but he made it look easy.
Exactly. It's like, 2 years or last year, I mean, the guy was inactive for 6 weeks, and his first catch was a long touchdown. But Sammy Coates not quite able to do, I think, what Martavis Bryant.
No. Different kind of athlete, totally.
In Baltimore, it looks like Steve Smith is returning from the PUP.
I saw that.
Yeah, but no Breshad Perriman, which is what a buzzkill.
Yeah, I know, and I'm so disappointed. I mean, who knows? Maybe the guy's never going to get on the field. I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but it's a shame, and I'd love his talent coming out, but you can't really do anything if you're not on the field.
So, Greg, it looks like we're actually relying a little bit, if we're fans of the Ravens and their passing attack, on Mike Wallace, who, from all accounts, has actually had a pretty good camp. What are your thoughts on a receiving core that's going to consist essentially of Wallace, Smith, Kamar Aiken? I don't know if they have a ton of margin for error here with Smith's availability.
No, but I will say this. I think at least with that receiving core, assuming Steve Smith can play, yeah. And, you know, hey, maybe he's not going to catch 90 balls, but assuming he's still relatively close to Steve Smith, then I think that at least it's a receiving core where Wallace fits, because he does not have to be the quote-unquote number one, which he's not.
Sure.
So I think at least he fits, because Smith at this point in his career is much more of an short to intermediate receiver, and clearly that's what Kamar Aiken is. So at least Wallace fits within the context of that receiving core.
I don't know if we've talked much in Cincinnati about Tyler Boyd. You and I, Greg, I mean, we've kind of pumped him up a little bit. And you know,
made a couple of nice catches this week.
Yeah, real nice. And would you be concerned with his lack of flash, with his lack of Zuzu, if you will? I mean, he's possession.
Yeah, he's a possession guy. He's a very good route runner. He's not explosive, so he'll make contested catches, but he's big and physical enough to do that.
Good hands.
So that will be his, yes, very good hands. You know, he's probably a lowercase Treadwell type receiver, you know, doesn't quite move as well, but I mean, he's got the good size. But I liked him coming out, but you have to understand what he is.
In Cleveland, I just wanted to mention, well, I don't even know if we want to go into the RG3 thing, Greg, because go ahead. What were your impressions?
Well, I did watch that, and, you know, first of all, he got hit way too much, which is a continuing problem.
Greg.
He's still too...
Greg, was the first, not to cut you off, sorry, but I...
No, that's okay.
The first play, his first pass, everyone said, oh, he bombed the Terrell Pryor. Greg, he looked like he died for a second there. I mean, that's just not good. That's not going to be able to continue.
Well, I mean, I would say that, and again, you know, this is a guy that has been in the league now for a while, okay? I know he didn't play last year, but he's been in the league. And I'm not going to use one preseason game to say he can't play, but I'm just, when a guy has a track record, then you can make some comments. And he still does not really have any natural feel for timing and anticipation. It's one reason he takes way too many hits. He's still a little slow in eliminating what's not there. You know, he doesn't really have an instinctive feel for the route concepts versus the specific coverages. Now, having said that, I don't believe the interception was on him.
Right.
I think that he made the right read, because it was technically a seam, middle seam throw against an open middle, a two-shell coverage. And I thought that actually Barnage was the one. He needed to bend that behind the linebacker, and he did not. So I don't believe that it was RG3's fault. If people wanted to assess blame, I don't believe it was his fault. I don't believe it was the wrong read.
It's not even that, Greg. It's what you said. The guy just gets hit way too often. It's amazing to me that, you know, a kid like never mind. We'll move on, Greg. and we'll see how that plays out. But the running backs in Cleveland, it's going to be Crowell, who is what he is. But if they go down, what are they going to do? I mean, what are your thoughts on Duke Johnson running the football last year? It was not very impressive.
No. And you know, I think you're going to see Hugh Jackson, because I think he's going to have to. I think there's going to be a lot of, for want of a better term, gimmicks to this offense. They're going to have to try to create offense. And I think that Hugh is good at that. I think he likes doing that. And I think you're going to see a lot of different looks, a lot of different plays. You know, you're not going to see sort of a traditional, conventional offense, because they'll struggle to move the ball.
By the way, to back up for a moment in Pittsburgh, because it's not looking good for Ladarius Green, Greg, and that's a problem.
I know.
For their entire offense. Do you have any thoughts on Jesse James? I second-year player. He had like four catches last year, but he is 6'7", and I know they like him. Any input on Jesse James?
A lot of really bad jokes came to mind, but I'll keep those to myself.
Gotcha. None of them about Eric Decker's wife, though, right? None of them about Eric Decker's. None of them about Eric Decker's wife.
No. I wasn't even going there at all.
Nothing but good things to say about her, Greg.
You know, you're the guy with the dirty mind, apparently. I was not even thinking about that.
Okay.
It's funny. Jesse James, I thought, toward the end of last year, flashed. And while he's not an explosive guy, he's 6'7". He's got a big wingspan. I mean, I think he can be I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's Heath Miller, but I think within the context of what Heath Miller did later in his career as essentially a short type receiver, I think Jesse James can fill that role. Now, he certainly won't fill it as well as Heath Miller right now, but that would be his role within the context of that offense.
And, Greg, I'm sure you spent some time on well, maybe not. I don't want to put words into your mouth here, but did you see the tape of the Tennessee Titans with their running attack?
Absolutely.
I'm sure you did. So we're getting all the talk here and the word about Derrick Henry. He's more laterally elusive and receiving. What were your impressions of Derrick Henry?
Well, I liked him in this game. I mean, I'd be careful about, you know, looking at a guy who played in college and carried the ball an awful lot and all of a sudden saying he's different. But I thought he looked very good. I thought their O-line really did a good job in this game. And of course, people want to say they weren't playing against a good defense. That's fine. I mean, that gets into the whole issue again about what did the preseason mean. The reality is the Titans want to establish an identity. They're going to run the ball, John. You know that. You know, Murray's going to carry 250-plus times, and Henry probably 140 times. You know, they're going to run the ball. And since they want to do that, they wanted to see good execution. The opponent doesn't matter. And they got terrific execution on a number of staple runs that you'll see all season long. I thought that both Murray and Henry looked very good running the ball.
Greg, you got three number one picks on this O-line. You got Lewan,
yep.
Conklin, Chance Warmack, you bring in Ben Jones to solidify the interior.
Who looked very good in that game. You know, Conklin's an interesting guy because he's a very good run blocker, but he really struggles in pass protection.
True, which is maybe not a tragedy with a mobile quarterback and an offense that wants to run it 46 times a game, Greg. With Murray, and again, he busted off a 71-yard touchdown. I mean, to me, the biggest takeaway is he can still run away from people, but, boy, he just if that line produces – to the talent. I mean, isn't DeMarco Murray, you know, for fantasy, and I mean, he's like a slam dunk.
Oh, yeah.
He's a slam dunk because he's not getting a lot of love, Greg. You know, you can get him, you know, as the 18th back off the board in some leagues. I just feel like put him in there and he'll produce.
I think that unless their defense is terrible, and I don't think it will be, they're going to run the ball, and DeMarco Murray's going to get carries, and he's going to get yards. Now, you know, he may not get 1,845 or whatever he had in Dallas, but he's going to get carries, and he's going to get yards.
And if the defense is bad and they're falling behind, I got to think, too, that Murray's going to play over Derrick Henry. Murray is a much more accomplished receiver.
Yeah, although they really like McCluster in that role,
and I
can tell you that for sure.
I
so
know.
He may be that guy.
Yeah. Jacksonville, did you? I think we talked about this on the radio.
You know, can I just say, the way you jumped around, there's one guy I wanted to mention because I've really liked him for the last couple of years, and it's a team we already talked about, but very quickly, and I don't know how you see him. Benny Cunningham on the Rams is a very interesting player. And, you know, he's going to play when they go three wide, not Todd Gurley. And Cunningham is a much better inside runner than people might think, and he's a very good receiver. And I think he's going to be a very important piece of this offense.
Well, it's funny you say that because I just did a radio show today in which we were talking about running back handcuffs. And I know you're hip to the lingo, but that is you have Todd Gurley. Who can you also draft to protect that investment? And I talked up Benny Cunningham for about 2 minutes. I watched him, too. I watch Hard Knocks, and I know Jeff Fisher trusts him like a son. And he's not flashy, Greg, but I said it on the air. If Todd Gurley is out of the mix, Benny Cunningham, lock it in, is getting 20-plus touches a game and probably 3-4 catches easily.
Yeah, he's just a good player. You know, when I was watching the Rams offense, he kind of reminded me, maybe not the exact player stylistically, but just in terms of how he's used and maybe production, of a Bilal Powell type guy.
There you go. That's not a bad comparison there. There you go. By the way, I'm glad.
Anyway, I just wanted to mention that because, you know, I think he's going to be an interesting player this year from a fantasy perspective.
Well, the question, Greg, is I view him as their hurry-up back for sure. I don't know if it's third down if Gurley's, like, just automatically coming off the field, though. I do think that they're going to try and keep Gurley on the field at times in passing situations.
But they won't want to wear Gurley out because he's still going to be their bell cow.
Right, right. It's a fine line. It's a fine line between building your offense around Todd Gurley and not killing him.
Right.
Speaking of Tennessee, to back up again, which is fine. We're going around here, and there are no rules, Greg. We make them up as we go along. There's no rules, so that's the beauty of this. But this receiving core in Tennessee now with Dorial Green-Beckham out of the mix is, I think, Rishard Matthews, your guy, Greg, is once again probably going to be the guy because Kendall Wright's had a bad summer. Andre Johnson, well, he's Andre Johnson. I don't think Justin Hunter's going to make it. I think Rishard Matthews all of a sudden now looks even more. And we could talk about Tajay Sharpe, the rookie.
Who, by the way, they love and has had an unbelievably good camp. And right now he's a starting wideout.
Yeah.
And he's, I saw him coming out of UMass as somewhat similar to a guy like Tyler Boyd. Now, I think Sharp's not built quite exactly the same, but he's a really smooth, fluid, efficient route runner. And that's continued at the NFL level through training camp.
Moving on here, Greg, to Indianapolis. Man, you know what? I actually don't have anything there. It was
And I didn't watch them because, luck didn't play, so I didn't watch them.
Very uneventful. You know, in Houston, though, and I struggle a little bit with Brock Osweiler. I actually thought Savage looked okay throwing it, but maybe that's simply because...
No, he looked better than Osweiler, who played fast. I thought he rushed himself a number of times, wanting it to happen right now as opposed to waiting. He looked to get rid of the ball really quickly. I didn't think he was very patient. You know, as we like to say, he had a number of snaps where he saw everything and nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and he was not a mentally comfortable player in that game. And again, whatever that means, I'm not saying he's not a good quarterback or can't be. That's what the tape in that game showed.
His very first game as a Houston Texan. So
yes.
we'll cut him a break. But, you know, it's funny you say that because, as I said, I thought Savage looked pretty solid.
And so did I.
In the back of my mind, I thought, wouldn't that just be the NFL, the Texans desperate for a quarterback, pay Brock Osweiler, and then Tom Savage ends up being better than Brock Osweiler. I don't know if that's going to happen. I know Savage's body of work is shaky overall, but maybe they have a decent backup at least. But, you know, this receiving core, Greg, did you see the catch that was made by Braxton Miller on the sideline? It was a contested catch. He kind of had to dive for it. I was impressed with Braxton Miller.
Yeah, I was impressed with Miller as well. I thought he moved well. He's a really loose athlete, and I made that note. I mean, I was overall just impressed watching him, you know, watching him move for a guy that's, you know, not been a full-time receiver his whole life.
Yeah, so all of a sudden they may have a pretty good receiving core with Hopkins,
yep,
with Strong coming on, Miller, Will Fuller is doing pretty well, and I guess apparently running routes and catching the football a little bit better. So good weapons there for the Houston Texans, and we can move on to the AFC West in Denver. Did you watch the tape of the Broncos?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because I wanted to see all three quarterbacks.
Boy, it just feels like Sanchez is going to be very comfortable throwing it to Demaryius. I'm not sure about Emmanuel Sanders, but your thoughts on the offense with Mark Sanchez at the helm. We'll start there.
Well, I thought that Kubiak, you know, being a veteran professional head coach, I thought he did a really, really good job with all three quarterbacks, to be honest with you. He gave them basic pass game concepts that they could all execute relatively easily, so he gave them all execution confidence. Clearly, Paxton Lynch is the most physically gifted of the three quarterbacks. Simeon, I thought, looked pretty good. He's somewhat methodical and mechanical, but he's got good stature, good base. He was calm and poised. You know, and Sanchez, I mean, I think we know what Mark Sanchez is, and, you know, the hope is that he can execute an offense that is basic is not the right word because no offense is basic in that sense, but an offense with, I think, pretty defined concepts that you hope Sanchez can execute those well and limit his mistakes.
Well, I was just going to ask you those defined concepts, run the ball, play action, bootleg, and
yep.
Isn't that an environment that could be conducive for a Paxton Lynch who's probably not ready to have some success if called upon?
Yeah, it certainly is. And I thought that Lynch showed good comfort with play action under center, which is a critical part of the Kubiak offense. So, you know, I think that was a really positive sign. And Lynch made the best throw. Lynch and Simeon made the best throws of the three quarterbacks. So, you know, but again, we'll see what happens. Sanchez is certainly the veteran who's been there.
We move on to San Diego, and I don't know if you saw the tape, if you have any impressions of Melvin Gordon's first game. I guess the kid scored a touchdown, happy for him. And I think he's got some potential in the passing game. He looked comfortable catching that. But did you see anything else from Melvin Gordon?
Well, I made it a point, John, because I knew you would ask me about Melvin Gordon. And I thought that he was a little better, but still tentative. You know, not as bad as last year, but he still needs some work. The guy who I thought was impressive was Hunter Henry, and yeah. I'm sure you noticed this as well. And they really worked him inside the numbers, you know, in the hash area really effectively. I think he's got a really good feel for finding voids in zone coverage. I was impressed with Hunter Henry, but I was impressed with him coming out as well.
Yeah, and it's a little confusing. Stevie Johnson out of the mix now, so, you know, what do they line up with? Is it, you know, more two tight end sets? I guess we'll see that as we move along here. But Hunter Henry, duly noted there. Let's move on to the Raiders. And how about our guy, DeAndre Washington. Sorry, DeAndre Washington.
I like him.
Made the unblocked defender miss on that long run. I thought he looked real comfortable catching the football. I mean, boy, he really flashed this past weekend, Greg.
And from what I've heard, he's been doing that all training camp. That wasn't an aberration. And as I've told you before, I thought that he reminded me coming out of college of a Devonta Freeman-type player. And I'm really anxious to continue to see this kid as we go through training camp. I think he's going to be, I don't want to say he's going to win the job, but I think he's going to get meaningful snaps, John, you know, whatever that means. He's not going to get four snaps a game. He's going to get meaningful snaps. And, you know, he's got, he's not explosive in terms of straight line speed, but he's got a lot of juice to him.
Yeah, some Zuzu there. But they are they are committed to Latavius, but
Yeah.
They clearly need
to be committed. Yeah, they'll be committed, and then unless things change as the year progresses.
Right. Greg, let's see what else we have here. Derek Carr, I think we touched on this last week, but when you think back to the tail end of last year, did you pick up on anything that was a little worrisome from Derek Carr? Because he did trail off a little bit.
Yeah, and I wouldn't call it worrisome. You know, don't forget he was a second-year quarterback. You know, I think that they struggled at times versus man coverage. My sense, and I can only tell you my sense from sitting and studying tape for a lot of years, is I think that they need, as a staff, to do more with their concepts versus man coverage to help both their receivers and Derek Carr. You know, and I think Derek Carr needs to continue to work on his footwork and his balance because he's got such a snap delivery with such a strong arm, you know, somewhat similar to an Aaron Rodgers, in that he throws some balls off balance because that's just the way he does it with that delivery. So, you know, there are things for him to still work on as a third-year quarterback.
That's it, Greg. We are done with this preseason podcast here, recapping week one of the preseason. We'll do it again next week when week two is going to be in the books next Thursday. Make sure you subscribe to our new feed on iTunes. By the way, look for the blue Fantasy Guru logo. Greg, enjoy your weekend. What are you doing anything football related this weekend other than maybe watching? I mean, what are you doing?
No, I'll be watching. You know, I'll start, you know, watching more and more. I mean, there's been a lot going on with the Olympics. I enjoy that. So, you know, football, I'll be watching as much as I can.
Great stuff, Greg. We'll talk with you next week. For Greg Cosell, I'm John Anson. This was the Fantasy Guru Podcast.
Stay tuned for 60-second AP News headlines.
AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire. Hillary Clinton is demanding once again that Donald Trump release his tax returns. To reporters writing on her campaign plane, Clinton accuses Trump of a number of questionable business deals over the years.
The list goes on and on. The scams, the frauds, the questionable relationships, the business activities that have stiff workers, refuse to pay small businesses.
Clinton is to be at a rally in Tampa this afternoon. Trump, for his part, is campaigning today in Virginia and North Carolina. AP White House correspondent Julie Pace reports Trump has been able to dial back the off-the-cuff remarks.
He likes to go in front of these big crowds and be more freewheeling and play off of their energy. Now he's going out there with teleprompters and with scripted remarks. And it really is a testament to his campaign leadership that they've gotten him to a point where he's willing to do this for at least a couple of weeks.
AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire.